podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This is the Ridiculous Border Gavaskar podcast. I'm Bharasundaresan. I'm here with my co-host, Dan Liepke.
Hello.
Hello, Dan. Oof. We are covering the historical Border Gavaskar series, to find out which nation is the more ridiculous at cricket. And it's safe to say, Dan, and I'm sure you'd agree, that India-Australia has sort of taken over as the rivalry to watch out for in cricket. Even though, you know, every time we'll take a break from it for the Ashes, but India-Australia is where it matters. Right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, certainly for the purposes of this podcast anyway. I mean, no point talking about any other nations for this one.
Of course. And look, there are so many India-Australia series we could have started with. But Australia are going to be in India very, very soon for the return of the Border Gavaskar series. And I think in my journalistic career, the most ridiculous India-Australia series I have covered was the one where Australia visited India in 2017. There were all sorts of drama on and off the field. And I think it's we both decided that it's the best place to start.
Definitely the best place to start. And how the whole thing works is that for each test, we'll go through the test one by one and we'll highlight the ridiculous moments delivered by each side. I'll do the Australian ones and Bharat will do the India ones. And at the end, we'll get together and we'll decide which of the six moments in total is the most ridiculous. That will get 3 points. The second most ridiculous will get 2. And the third most ridiculous, 1 point. And the team which has the most ridiculous moments will be declared the winner of that ridiculous test match. And without getting too bogged down in the definition of ridiculous, we basically can have ridiculous good, ridiculous bad, ridiculous absurd. Doesn't really matter, as long as it's something kind of out of the ordinary, and you know, you know it when you see it. So that's what we'll be going with here.
That sounds perfect, Dan. Yeah, we should just get stuck into it. And like you said, yeah, ridiculous could be anything. And as we've seen when these two teams play each other, mostly it's ridiculously good. Such incredible talents on show. But again, yes, we have some ridiculous players involved when India and Australia play each other, and new or once getting on board as well. So there's always something out of the ordinary that transpires. And also you and I are the types who will spot something, right? Even if it might miss the eye of an avid cricket watcher. You and I are not avid cricket watchers. We almost watch cricket to pick out these ridiculous moments.
Well, that's the best part of watching cricket, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, runs and wickets and boundaries, everybody talks about. Yeah, but it's what happens in between the runs and the wickets that matters.
Exactly. So where were India heading into this test series?
Look, Dan, India were really tired. Sachin Tendulkar retired in 2013. The next year, India was supposed to play West Indies in a bunch of test matches, but the West Indies just ridiculously went home.
That's right, I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, they just decided to pack up and go home. The next year, 2015, they played South Africa at home, but that series was all over the place. We saw some pretty ragingly ridiculous turners, if I may say so. And that series didn't last too long. So going into the 2016-17 season, India hadn't played much test cricket at home. So what do? You just pack the calendar up with like literally no breaks at all. And in between, I remember covering a test match in each of those series at home. So New Zealand came in September, and September is not when India generally hosts international cricket. The season or the winter season really starts more towards the end of October. But yeah, I mean, 2016, it started September 22nd when New Zealand played their first test in Kanpur. That they played 3 tests in that series, and then they hung around for some white ball stuff. Then England came and played 5 tests,
right,
spread between, I think, early November or early December, right into early January. And then Bangladesh came and quite interestingly played their first ever test match on Indian soil, even though they'd been around for 17 years at that point as a test nation. And like I said, England actually did a full tour. They played ODIs, 3 T20Is. And by the time Australia landed, India had already played 9 tests, 8 ODIs, 3 T20Is in the space of, 4 months. So they were really, really tired. And the guys who had really shouldered the burden of the Indian bowling ranks anyway were R. Ashwin and Ravindra Jadeja. They were at their peak. They were ranked 1 and 2 in test cricket at that point. And between them, Dan, they had bowled over 1,000 overs across formats.
That's a busy workload.
Busy workload, yeah. And taken nearly 130 wickets. So, not surprisingly, I think going in, what Anil Kumble and Virat Kohli wanted were quick test matches. And also, the test matches that had been played before or prior to Australia's arrival were all on flat, classic subcontinental wickets, the ones you would find in the 1990s or the late 1990s. So, most of those test matches went into day 5, like scores of 400, not just scored by India, but the overseas or the visiting teams as well. So, when Australia arrived, I think India just decided, you know what, if we want Jadeja and Ashwin to basically stand on 2 feet and for their shoulders and fingers not fall off, we'll need some pitches which can produce some really quick test matches. And that's what really led into that interesting or ridiculous pitch that we found in Pune.
Yeah, well, from an Australian perspective, I think India were correct to think they could get some quick test results here, because Australia's form wasn't great heading into this test series. Their most recent Asian tour had been a 3-match tour of Sri Lanka at the end of the previous year, and they'd lost that one 3-0. Then they'd returned home and they'd lost the first 2 tests against South Africa, including this wretched 85 all out in the second test, which prompted calls for mass axings and got all kinds of interesting new people into the side, such as Matt Renshaw and Peter Hanscom and Nick Maddison. So Australia won the third test against South Africa, a bit of a consolation victory there. And then they went on to beat Pakistan 3-0 in the second series of home tests. But that wasn't really great preparation for India. The last time they'd toured India in the Homework Gate series, they'd lost 4-0. And I don't think there was much confidence among Australian fans they'd do any better this time around. So just to summarise what happened in this first test, Australia won the toss. They chose to bat first. David Warner and Matt Renshaw then put on 82 for the first wicket, which was quite impressive. But after Warner was out, Matt Renshaw went off with some stomach illness, and then there were some middle order stumbles, and they fell to 169 for 5 and then 205 for 9. There was just a little bit of 10th wicket hitting from Mitchell Stark to get them to 260. In reply, India lost a few early wickets, including Virat Kohli's duck, his first ever duck. And then Steve O'Keefe triggered a collapse of 7 for 11, which saw India bowled out for just 105. Australia batted again. Steve Smith scored a century as Australia reached 285, which meant India needed 441 for an improbable victory. Instead, O'Keefe took another 6-wicket haul, finishing with 12 for the match. India were bowled out for 107, giving Australia a 333-run victory and a very shocking 1-0 lead in the series.
Yeah. And look, even before we got to Pune, Dan, I remember reading a lot about, even writing about it, how Australia had spent a few weeks in the UAE preparing for this series. Not only had they scuffed up some of those pitches, they'd surrounded them, or every batter was surrounded by a lot of plastic chairs, which, I don't know, when you're traveling with a massive squad, I don't know why you wouldn't use human players to practice for the conditions or the situations they were expecting to face in India, but they use plastic chairs. I don't know, maybe they think Indian cricketers are like plastic chairs.
I was just going to say, that's a little bit offensive to Indian cricketers, surely, to compare them to plastic chairs.
Yeah, definitely. I think they have a lot more personality. Most of them, especially
most stand of
around.
Them, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think Pujara or Rahane would take great umbrage to that. I would as well on their behalf. And they land in India, and it's I remember the only talk Steve Smith in that press conference with alongside Darren Lehman, seems like a long time ago. Mm. You take those two names together in the same sentence. In my preview for that tour, I wrote about how all they spoke about, how un-Aussie they sounded. It was all about hope. Everything was about hope. I even counted, I think, 17 times the word hope was mentioned in that first ever press conference. Generally, Australian teams would travel, and when you would be asked about the opposition captain, they would say, oh, yeah, we'll knock him over. Yeah. And Virat Kohli at that point was in this rich rain of form, an incredible rain of form. He couldn't stop scoring runs. And neither Smith nor Lehman sounded sounded very confident about having any great plan. You know, they said there was something, but they didn't sound confident at all. It was all based around hope.
Yeah, you can't imagine Steve. I don't even think Steve Waugh believes in hope. Steve Waugh would just, you know, will things into being. Like, if it wasn't happening, he'd just make it happen. Yeah, he certainly didn't believe in anything as commonplace as hope.
Andy Dufresne might have convinced Morgan Freeman's character in Shawshank Redemption. Imagine that scene if it was Steve Waugh. I don't think Steve Waugh would have like gone and looked for any box hidden somewhere. Once he was released from prison. we should make a spoof Shawshank Redemption movie with Steve Waugh in it. You know,
the Warshank Redemption.
The Warshank Redemption, yeah. I mean, imagine, right, that nickname Steve Waugh, Tugger, just made for someone who was in a prison break movie. But anyway, we digress.
We do.
There was hope, and then things didn't go well for them in the warm-up game. It was at the CCI, the Brabourne Stadium, where, again, the expectation was, there'll be spin from day one. And the one thing we've learned from teams coming to the subcontinent, especially going to India, is once you start playing the spinners and spin in your head, that's it. You're not looking at the ball.
Yeah.
We saw it with England last year when they were in India. And then, of course, what happens is India CCI or the BCCI provides the flattest pitch you could imagine at Brabourne. They picked two spinners in the India A squad, Krishnappa Gautam, that nobody had really heard of much at that point. And he breaks down, allegedly, doesn't bowl a single ball. And all Australia get to face are India A's part-time spinners. So the likes of Shreyas Iyer, even Rishabh Pant bowled a few overs. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, got a wicket as well.
That sounds like Pant.
Yeah, right. That exactly sounds like Rishabh Pant. And then, you know, there was this hype around Nathan Lyon. Till 2013, he'd never looked comfortable in the subcontinent. But towards the end of the 2013 series, there was talk about how... And they've had a weird relationship, right? Nathan Lyon and R. Ashwin. Every time Ashwin's come to Australia, everyone in India wants him to bowl like Lyon. And every time Lyon goes to India, everybody in Australia wants him to bowl like Ashwin.
Yeah.
It's a weird... I would love to have them seated together and talking about that someday. Nathan Lyon got absolutely walloped in that game. Initially, it was Shreyas Iyer, who has since gone and played Test cricket and One Day cricket and T20 cricket for India. But he was this young Tyro from Mumbai at that point. We all saw a lot of him, you know, considering I was from Mumbai, I saw a lot of him, covered a lot of his junior cricket. And he just smashed Nathan Lyon on day one. And day two, this Krishnappa Gautam, who did not bowl in the second innings, or bowled in the first innings, at one point smashed Nathan Lyon for, I think, four sixes in two overs. And in that spell, Nathan Lyon's numbers were six overs, none for 57. Then it was all courtesy Krishnappa Gautam. And at one point, Nathan Lyon even walked up to Shreyas Iyer and asked him, who is this guy? There were a lot of people at the ground, even in the press box, who were asking the same question.
Yeah.
So basically, the India A guys just smashed the whatever confidence Nathan Lyon had going into that series completely off. And the Aussies hardly got to play spin. Sean Marsh and Steve Smith made hundreds in that game. So it wasn't a classical build-up. So all the preparation in the UAE had sort of come to naught when they landed in Mumbai, just because India didn't give them anything to work with.
Fantastic. All right. So what's your first nomination here?
My first nomination is, funnily enough, the curator. And he's a fascinating character, Pandurang Salgaonkar. Unfortunately, a couple of years after this, or actually the next year, there was a one-day that New Zealand were playing, and there was these false allegations of pitch tampering or match fixing that were leveled against him. And he's a really sweet guy, and it really impacted him. And thankfully, those allegations were dropped later on.
Yep.
It was just some random sting operation that was carried out on him. But rewind 12 months, and back in February 2017, I remember he did this one. He had this wonderful press conference with all the Indian journalists. It was a hot day. It was a very hot week in Pune. And for those listening to us in Australia, Pune is like, say, what Geelong is to Melbourne.
Right, yep.
Yeah, it's the same size as Geelong. It doesn't have an AFL side called the Cats, but so there's this highway you can get onto from Mumbai and it just carries you there. And the stadium is interestingly located. It's not all the way in Pune. Some would say it's closer to New Bombay, as a part of Bombay is called, than Pune. So it's in the middle of nowhere. It's a strange stadium. It's a stadium which has, at one end, Dan, they have these massive kennels very close to the press conference
room. Kennels?
Kennels with nearly 40 dogs. And massive dogs. Don't ask me why. Because the guy who runs the stadium, you know, is a massive canine fan, clearly. And you know there is a match happening in Pune or back in the day, because the first picture you would see is MS Dhoni surrounded by dogs, because he's a dog guy. And like, he knew all their names. And if you were a journalist, and a lot of, well, not everyone in India is a dog fan. In fact, most of them, or a lot of them, are really scared of dogs. So going to the press conference room used to be quite an experience, because you would hear all these big German Shepherds and Rottweilers barking as he walked towards the press conference room. So, I mean, I always used to tell them, it's MS Dhoni is ensured that they are set free every time, like, you know, India lose, just so that those who want to ask him the hard questions stay away. And the curator, Pandurang Salgaonkar, actually is a former cricketer, played for Maharashtra, was a fast bowler, from all reports, was this menacing fast bowler who surprisingly didn't play for India. But in the 70s, he broke Sunil Gavaskar's hand during a game, in one tour game against West Indies, got rid of Roy Fredericks and Alvin Kalachara, and he bounced them out. And he sat on this plastic chair inside this tunnel. We surrounded him. There were like at least 20, 25 of us, a couple of Australian journalists as well. And he spoke about like how no batsman to this day even comes close to me, because they're scared of me. And at this point, he was, I would say, close to 70 years old.
Right.
And he spoke about how this pitch will fly, there will be bounce. And you have to remember, this is the first ever test match in Pune. So, you know, it was a virgin test pitch in a way. Mm-hmm. And it was his debut as a test curator. So there he sat talking about the pitch will fly, there will be bounce. And from where we stood, we could see the pitch. It was as bland. The color had this wheatish complexion. You could see without even going close to it that it was extremely dry. But yeah, Pandurang Salgaonkar was having none of it. He kept talking about, like, you know, there'll be bounce. And he even went to the other extreme. He said, there will be cracks. Yes, the sun is out. But unlike cracks in other parts of the country, this will provide nothing for the spinners.
Nothing for the spinners. Shame he didn't tell Steve O'Keefe about that.
I know, exactly, right? So and while that was happening, Daljeet Singh, who also, I think, is a former cricketer, but more importantly, has been the head of curators in India for a long time, or had been at that stage. And every time you saw Daljeet Singh walk into a ground that he isn't a part, or he's from the north, but they would fly him in only if there was an emergency with regards to the surface. But randomly, while Pandurang Salgaonkar was talking about this fiery whack-a pitch that he'd produced in Pune, a Gabba pitch, Daljeet Singh was walking towards the pitch. And we knew at that point, whatever Pandurang is saying doesn't count. And literally all our attention just changed or just turned towards what was happening towards Daljeet and the pitch. As we would later find out, there were a lot of he told, she told, you know, allegations thrown around, or accusations thrown around, because we know what happened in the match, as you laid out there. And the curators complained about how their hands had been forced, and the team management, Anil Kumble and co, had forced them to produce a turning pitch, and how this pitch wasn't going to be... you know, couldn't just be a turning pitch, right? When you tamper with a pitch, if it's not naturally one that is suited for a particular kind of bowling, you're destroying it. And the Pune pitch, I remember even the previous year, the Ranji Trophy final, Ranji Trophies are our Sheffield Shield in India. The final was dominated by fast bowlers. The spinners bowled four overs between them. So that was the reputation this pitch had, like, you know, and the curator had. But they were, apparently their hand was forced, and they used everything from metal brushes. And I was just surprised then that they didn't let the dogs out. I mean, if I, Yeah, I mean, if you have like a bunch of really angry German Shepherds and Rottweilers, just let them on the pitch, right?
Yeah, like, they'll dig it up there.
Exactly, yeah, but they didn't. And they'd use metallic brushes, and literally they stopped watering the pitch 4 days out from the test match. It was extreme to another level. And I mean, it really has to stand as the most ridiculous press conference now when you think back at it. And I also, on a personal front, my wife had just left for Australia.
Yeah.
She came here to study, to Adelaide. And I remember it was unique for me. You know, we'd already been married for quite a while, but suddenly, I hope she doesn't listen to this, but I had freedom. know? I was by myself in Bombay, like for the first time in many years.
Yeah.
So even though, you know, and within a day or two, I had to travel to Pune for this test match. So I wanted the test match to finish early so that I could go back
and wander around.
Yeah, live again in a way. So,
yeah.
And I remember at the end of that press conference, just putting my, I didn't know him at all, but I just put my arm on his shoulder, Pandurang Salgaonkar, and I said, "Sir, please, can you finish this test match in 2 days? My wife has left and I have to go sort things out." And he just smiled and said, "Yes, yes, yes." So at some level, I would like to believe that he did it for me.
Very good. The not quite as fast as advertised pitch. That's an excellent nomination. Okay, well, my first nomination is Matt Renshaw shitting himself. So, and this is quite literally, he wasn't terrified of the fast bowlers on this lightning fast track. He was literally worried about something that might happen in his pants. So as I mentioned, Warner was out in the 28th over, and as Warner wandered off the field, Matt Renshaw, his opening partner, ran off at the same time. And Steve Smith came out, the captain, batting at number three, and he kind of questioned Renshaw what he was doing, and he actually dragged poor old Matt Renshaw back to the middle to talk to the umpire. And it was only after Renshaw explained, "Look, I'm suffering from some gastrointestinal distress here," that the umpire allowed him to retire. I think he was retired ill, technically, and he raced off to the toilet, to the dressing room, which meant poor old Sean Marsh also had to come out of the dressing room. So entirely new partnership after the dismissal of David Warner. So we did have on the Final Word podcast a few years later, Renshaw kind of gave us a glimpse into his mind as to what he was thinking. And he basically said that he let one rip out there in the middle about 15 minutes away from lunch. And then about 5 minutes later, he was starting to feel a bit uncomfortable. And he said, "Is this another fart or is this something a bit more serious?" And then he asked Kettleborough, how long until lunch? And he was like, 15 minutes. And he did the maths and thought, 4 overs, I'm not sure I can last that long. And so when Warner was out, it gave him an excuse to trot off, which didn't please several former old Australian cricketers. So we did have Alan Border in commentary, and he was not at all impressed with Matt Renshaw. He said, quite remarkably, he hoped that Renshaw was in there half dead. So a bit harsh from Baby.
Yeah, look, we've all been there at some point. Maybe not in the middle, playing a test match with the whole world watching you. But yeah, there are times, and that's what Matt Renshaw said at the end of the day. He came and said, there are times when you have to go, you have to go. And he came back and batted. And some of the lines I used in my piece, I'm very impressed by. Thanks to you, I had to go back and read some of them. I said, when David Warner was dismissed, he left holding his head and Matt Renshaw holding his stomach. Yeah. he came back and then I also said that he looked a lot more relieved when he came out and batted. And he batted pretty well. You're right. Alan Border went after him. Damien Martin. Of course, in these situations, you just expect Justin Langer's name to come out,
yes,
right? Like, you know, but I don't think, and as much as Justin Langer deserves to be respected for walking out to bat with a bandage over his head after being hit on the head and being concussed, I think it's very different scenarios. I think with a head injury or one of those things, you're slightly more in control of what's happening, right? But whoever you are, even if you're the toughest man on the planet or toughest woman on the planet, when your bowels want to take a call in many ways, they're in control. You just have to submit. You can be Arnold Schwarzenegger, but you have to go. There's nothing you can do.
Yes.
And I did feel bad for him. And Damien Martin was the one who brought up Justin Langer and said he would have lost a limb and still batted on. But I mean, yes, as painful as it sounds, I don't know if it would compare to what Renshaw had to.
Yeah, I guess if you lost an arm, you just bat with the other arm. And if you lose a leg, you just hop down the pitch. Yeah, I think you'd easily lose a limb and bat on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And look, maybe this is why they practice with plastic chairs, right? I don't think plastic chairs would have an issue with you if you shat your pants.
Easy to clean,
yeah. I funnily enough, even wrote a piece on just Renshaw's toilet issues. I called an international umpire who I knew, and I asked him, like, what is the clarity? Like, you know, and this is back when I wasn't umpiring, so I wanted to know if there is a specific law or just a mention for a toilet break because there's the law book. There are also a lot of interpretations of the law, right? Yep. And just wanted to know if there was anything in the sly about loo activities. And this is what he said. He said, it's dangerous to hold up play for a batsman's nature's call unless it's for a pee. A couple of minutes is fine, but a long call in court cannot be warranted. He'll have a lot to answer for otherwise. So basically, he could not have gone off, like, you know, taken a dump and come back out. He would have been declared out there.
Yeah, time wasting. You can't waste that much time. Got to get in and out. Or get it out. You don't really want it in, right?
No. Don't keep it in. It's never good. Never healthy. There you go. Some health advice from us as well.
Yes. All right. What's your next nomination?
There's just so much that happened in this game. It's tough to just pick two or three out. You helped me out with this one. And I didn't recall this immediately, but now looking back, this was quite something. Jayant Yadav, who at that point had just become an overnight sensation, had done well against England. Scored 100 in Mumbai when nobody expected him to. Then bowled this massive no-ball to clean bowl David Warner around his legs. And this is back when the third umpire wasn't making calls, right? It was the umpires in the middle who'd actually signal front foot no-balls. It seems like such a long time ago.
It does.
To the extent, Dan, like when I umpired for the Saka at local cricket, I wish that happened here as well. Like, you know, you cover a lot of international cricket and then you have to go and do something like that. A couple of times I completely forgot that I have to call the no ball. I'm not kidding. Yeah, I hope nobody in local cricketing circles is listening to this.
Well, the umpire signaled this one really quickly too. Like, he signaled it so quickly that the fielders didn't even appeal, despite the fact that Warner had been clearly bowled. Like, they already knew by the time it hit the stump that it was a no ball. So he didn't muck about with the call.
Yeah, but you could make out why when you saw the side on angle. It was like, you know, a massive no ball for a spinner especially.
Yeah.
And Jayant Yadav is not the tallest. And actually, his delivery stride, it's not very long. So it was just interesting. I don't know what happened. Maybe he lost his mark at some point. Because it was a bizarre no ball and he just fires the ball in. And it hits the edge of leg stump.
Yeah.
You know, so if it was hit on the pads and if it was umpire's call, he would not be out. So it hit the edge of the outside part of the leg stump, Warner's leg stump, and went for four. And Warner, and maybe, look, that's the thing, right? David Warner is so used to being dismissed of no balls. We've seen that happen to him so many times.
Yeah, it's part of his tactics, I think.
I think so. There must be something about David Warner when he is batting that gets the bowler to just, you know, overstep the line or try to get closer to him before delivery.
Yeah, everybody wants to get as close as possible to David Warner. That's a known fact.
That is true. Yeah, it's well known in bowling circles. I've heard that as well. Like, yeah, get as close to David Warner as possible. Yeah, I mean, not with the ball, not after you've released the ball, but before you've released them. So, and I think my favorite, and there are so many to pick from, my favorite David Warner no-ball dismissal happened right here in Adelaide in 2014. Varun Aaron, at that point, the fastest bowler India had produced in Test cricket, bowled him with a new ball and bowled him clean and started screaming, "Come on, come on, come on," in front of his face. And actually, on this occasion, I think David Warner didn't hear the no ball, or they checked it later, because he had almost walked off, not all the way off, but he'd walked off halfway towards the dressing room, and then he was called back.
Yeah.
And then what happened in the next few balls of that over, I've never seen it happen before or after, where a batsman or a batter was sledging the fast bowler. Where Warner would defend the ball and then start screaming, "Come on, come on, come on," at Varun Aaron. And Varun Aaron really did not know what to do. And Varun's a lovely guy. He's actually one of those fast bowlers who's fiery on the field, but a lovely guy off the field. But for once, he just did not know what to do. What do you do, right? Like, so David Warner did have the last laugh there. But yeah, again, even here, I thought Ravi Shastri on commentary was just brilliant as well. And Ravi Shastri was sort of coming back into the commentary box after a brief stint as India coach. This is before, you know, he took over and started winning all over the place. And he was having a blast, Ravi Shastri. And I wish I had heard that. I would have given you a Ravi Shastri. I'm known for my Ravi Shastri impressions. Maybe we can do it like as an add-on, as a bonus later on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he pulled out the it's all happening in Pune.
It's all happening in Pune. Yeah, he did give it. He did give it the Bill Lorry there. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, that's a very ridiculous moment. I do love the fact that we can talk about. Favorite Dave Warner no ball dismissals. That's just the most ridiculous thing in the world that you can have a favorite one of those. All right. My next nomination is Steve O'Keefe doing weird bowling feats. So as we mentioned, Steve O'Keefe, this was the fifth test of his career. He'd previously taken 14 wickets in four tests, and he added 12 to the list in this match. So in the first innings, he took 6 for 35. And I guess one of my favourite rare bowling feats in that was he did the rare every other ball hat trick. So in over 33 of India's first innings, he had KL Rahul caught second ball. He had Rehane caught at second slip fourth ball. And then he had Saha caught it slip on the sixth ball. So every other ball hat trick. I think that's more impressive than a regular hat trick because, you know, anyone can dismiss a batter first ball when he doesn't yet have his eye in. I mean, that's why it doesn't count in backyard cricket. But to get them on the second delivery, that takes a bit more skill, I think.
Oh, you know what? I have always been a big proponent for the I wasn't ready, power that a batter should have. Like we have in backyard cricket especially, right, where if you out first ball, you say, I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a trial ball. Like, why not? I mean, the game is so, so tended towards batters anyway. Just introduce the trial ball as well. And if you don't want to do it in test cricket or one day cricket, there are so many other formats these days, right? The 100, the 60.
Yeah.
I was calling for an 8-over format last week and a lot of people took me seriously. But I hope nobody who matters took me seriously or we will have one.
We'll have it. We'll have the 80 next year.
Maybe we should bring that in. Maybe I should give a call to Chris Gayle.
Yep.
He could add it to the 60 think that's what it's called.
I think so. I don't think it's fair on the poor old batter. Yeah, make it a free hit as well. Yeah, I mean, it effectively is a free hit if you can't get out, right?
That is true, yeah.
And then I guess the other kind of weird thing that Steve O'Keefe managed in this test after taking 6 for 35 in the first innings was that he matched the figures precisely in the second innings. Another 6 for 35 in the second innings, which made it the best identical bowling figures in test match history. So 12 for 70 overall, 2-6 for 35s. And I kind of like the idea that when when you click on a web link or something to see a bowler's best figures, it says 6 for 35 and it says where it is. But in this one, like, it doesn't. He's got two of them. So I'm not quite sure how they designate that, how they split them.
Going into that series, there was so much. He received so much flack from the late great Shane Warne, and nobody really wanted him to play the test match. And look, Ashton Agar was part of that party. The great Mitchell Swepson was there already. It's amazing when you think about it, right? Like, we're talking about 5.5 years ago. Swepson was part of that squad. People actually thought he could be playing. And obviously, Shane Warne wanted the leg spinner to play.
Yes.
Right? I mean, obviously you would if you're Shane Warne. And Steve O'Keefe was looking at the weakest link of that bowling attack. And Shane Warne would say this repeatedly on commentary or in pre-match shows. Even on the day he went on to take those first, or the first six wicket haul. And I remember very clearly, Dan, this is back in my smoking days. I finished a fag. I was just walking towards the press.
Did your wife know you were smoking, or was this something you picked up after she left for Adelaide?
Oh, no. Clearly, it was the depression of having, depression's the wrong word. Or this is just me being upset about her leaving. You do that, right?
Like, yes. Yeah,
that's when I started growing my hair, the beard, and all untrue. But I remember walking back. back towards the press box. And the commentary box, in Pune, you have like a tent. I don't know what it's like now, but a tent-like setup with these little boxes which act as commentary boxes. And I remember Shane Warne and Michael Clark were just standing and having a chat. And very vividly, I remember walking up to both of them and asking Shane Warne, I said, this 6-wicket haul or Michael Clarke's 6-for-9, which one do you rate higher? And he said that he thought about it and he was like, it's very tough to pick which, like, you know, I don't know which one was more, he didn't say shittier, but which one was more undeserving or like, you know, which one of them was more undeserving of the 6-wicket hauls.
Hard man to impress is Shane Warne.
Yeah, I know. It's tough to impress Shane. This is the first innings, but I'm sure he was singing his Steve O'Keefe's praises after the second innings.
Yeah.
To Steve O'Keefe's credit, I thought he bowled brilliantly. And on a pitch like that, you hear from a lot of former spinners in the subcontinent. You almost have to become a slow medium pacer, right? You just have to do what Jadeja does very regularly, and what Jadeja couldn't do in that Test match, or Steve O'Keefe outdid both Jadeja and Ashwin. And that's where I think, and Lyon, you know, I thought he was to be the best spinner in a Test match on a turning pitch when you're playing alongside Ashwin, Lyon, Jadeja, I think tells a lot. At this point, like I said, Ashwin and Jadeja were rated 1 and 2. Steve O'Keefe deserved a lot of credit. And I remember writing about, he had this alcohol ban he'd imposed on him, if you remember, you know, after all the indiscretions he had, that had occurred in his career and like on and off the field. And he was closing in at that point on 200 days since his last beer.
Right.
And interestingly enough, the day he took his first 6-wicket haul. So we don't have this in Australia because I think Australia would shut down if there's ever a dry day in Australia. But there are many dry days in India.
Right.
I mean, there are some states in India which are dry states.
Okay.
But thankfully, Maharashtra, which houses both Mumbai and Pune, they don't belong to a dry state. Maharashtra isn't a dry state. And I grew up there. Says a lot about, now you know a lot about me already.
Yeah.
but there are lots of dry days and not just on days or like the Independence Day. That's funny, right? We celebrate our Independence Day with no alcohol, and our Republic Day as well.
Yeah.
I just had to sneak in the Republic Day there, sorry.
Yeah,
so,
right.
And lots of other festivals, and we do have, especially in Hinduism, we have, I think, somewhere close to 8.2 million gods and deities. So pretty much not all of them, thankfully, fall or are celebrated on a dry day, but a lot of them are.
Right.
And this happened to be on a dry day. So for someone who had, put an alcohol ban on himself to then produce this magical performance, his best ever performance on a dry day. Do you see the poetry in this?
That's good. Did he have a drink after the second 6-for?
He should have. I just read my piece. I said, I don't know who I was to declare it, but I said he should. I ended my piece saying, today would be the best day for him to break it.
Yeah.
We still don't know. We'll have to find out.
Probably best, given some of his behavior when he does have a few drinks, I think.
I know, probably. And I thought overall, he consolidated his performance in Pune well. I think Indians started playing him much better as the series progressed. Mm. But you spoke about 6-for-35, but his spell, that 7-for-11.
Yes.
And that is my next nomination.
Right, okay. In
India losing 7-for-11.
Nice segue.
Which, thank you. And which at that point was their worst ever collapse. This is a few years before 36 and all that in Adelaide.
Yes.
But even in Adelaide, I don't think they lost 7-for-11. 7-for-11 is just mad. At that point, India's worst ever collapse in Test cricket was 7-for-18. And that had happened in Christchurch back in February 1990. And it's a famous series. It's the only time Sachin Tendulkar faced Richard Hadley. So, two eras together. And Hadley and Danny Morrison just ran through India. Ian Smith made a famous 100. And but what that series is most known for is while India were flying back, Bishan Singh Bedi, who was the then Indian coach and who was not known to hold back, spoke about how he wanted to throw all of them into whichever ocean comes the way. on this day, or dumped into the Pacific, he had said, to be precise.
Right.
And India looked good. I think KL Rahul was batting really well. And then he played a shot which sort of set the rot in motion. And Anil Kumble, who was the coach at this point, wasn't very happy with it. He even said at one point when someone asked him in the press conference if he thought, because KL Rahul had a left shoulder niggle, I think he'd hurt himself while fielding. Mm-hmm. And someone asked him, do you think it was the pain in his shoulder that prompted KL Rahul to play that hoik that, you know, led to him being dismissed? And Anil Kumble, I remember, clearly said, I think the shot created the injury, not just to him, but even to the team. So, yeah, some tough love from Anil Kumble. And it was just magical bowling from Steve O'Keefe. Like I said, 6 for 5 in 4.1 overs. Those were his figures. When, you know, those 6 wickets, yes, 6 for 35 looks good. But when you break it down, the fact that his figures when he was taking those wickets were 4.1 overs, 1 maiden, 5 runs, 6 wickets. That's, yeah, maybe one of the greatest spells ever in Test cricket.
It was fantastic. I think one of my favorite wickets was one of the very few that O'Keefe didn't take. It was Ravi Ashwin's wicket, which he defended a ball from Lyon and somehow it hit him on the boot and bounced up. And Hanscom, who was fielding in close on the leg side, dove forward to claim the catch. So Australia did do a couple of really, really sharp catches in this collapse as well.
Oh, no, very much. And Hanscom was on top of it, right? That catch of Rahane was incredible at gully. Yep. He just diving to his right, picking it up just as it was about to land. And this one as well. I think Hanscom, this was Hanscom's make. People thought he was made to play or be successful in the subcontinent. And he was. You know, he went on to have a very good series and he was taking all these catches. You thought that Hanscom and Renshaw were in for good. You know, even with his bowel issues, Renshaw made a very very handy 60-odd in that inning. So, on Steve O'Keefe, his quotes towards the end of the test, I thought were really good. That press conference was one of the more honest press conferences I've attended in my time as a journalist, Dan. He was so open about it. Mm-hmm. He spoke about how, you know, about his mother. He'd spoken about in an interview about how she used to drive him around, and even though she was working through the night as a nurse to, you know, to keep things in order at home. So he did speak about how 6 years ago, prior to this test, Virat Kohli was at the Adelaide Academy, or not the Academy, in Brisbane by then, I think that had shifted. And he used to drive him around. So Steve O'Keefe, Matthew Wade and Virat Kohli, if I'm not mistaken, were very good friends at that point.
Yep.
And his quote was, I used to drive him around so that he could get his ASICS shoes. So since I looked after him a bit there, I'm sure he owns a shoe factory now. So hopefully I'd get a pair of shoes from him. It was really good. And, yep. You know, I thought we just had to slip it in there. It was wonderful. He was so happy. I remember he was so happy as he was leaving. I remember my great friend Pete Lawler said something to him about, you know, about the spell. And you could see that he was just genuinely surprised. But, you know, but
he wasn't alone.
He wasn't alone. Yeah, he was overjoyed. And he spoke about the criticism that Shane Warne had come from Shane Warne.
Yep.
That Shane Warne's mentor, Terry Jenner, had come his way from Terry Jenner when he was alive and he was running the academy where Steve O'Keefe was. So, yeah, I mean, it was kind of a moment which everybody deserves in life. And I'm glad it was Steve O'Keefe.
Yep. Fantastic. Yeah, no, yeah. So that's the 7 for 11 collapse. All right. My next nomination is Steve Smith scoring 5 for 100. So as we mentioned, Smith scored a century in Australia's second innings. He made 109. But he was also given 5 lives in the process. So he was dropped 4 times on the way to this century. And he was also given not out on an LBW that, if it had been reviewed, would have been out. But Indy were in a very burn review phase of their DRS career at this point. So they didn't have a review to get him out on that LBW. So Steve Smith later described his century here. He did an Instagram Q&A and he described it as a fluke. He said, I got dropped 5 times, so essentially I got 5 good 20s. Fluke. But nevertheless, despite being dropped 5 times and having, you know, essentially 5 wickets to get his century, his 100 was more than each of India's team innings. So and they had 10 wickets each time. So I still think it's okay, right?
Oh, I really thought it was, I know you know, he was dropped a few times. He had a few reprieves. I think he's being a little harsh on himself. Yeah. It was brilliant batting. I mean, when he... see, that's test cricket in those conditions, right? Where, I mean, you hear it so often when teams go and play in England, especially in May and June, when the, or even in April, when the ball's doing a lot. You have to be lucky to survive at times, right? And Steve Smith had spoken a lot about how they wanted to, you know, get rid of that whole myth of, oh, there is a... you know, every there you'll get a ball with your name on it when you bat in those conditions, which is a very interesting term. I've always been surprised nobody's actually done that, like, you know, actually written a batter's name, and like maybe it would count as tampering with the ball, but just I don't know, do something.
I mean, unless you're bowling to a batter named what, Duke or Kookaburra, I guess.
That is true. That is true. Yeah, I'm surprised we've never had a. I mean, we've had a few Dukes who played cricket, but nobody with a surname called. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, kind of. Gets you thinking. Yeah, I wish. Now I'm going to go around the world looking for a batter called Duke just to. or SG maybe. Like,
yes. Yeah. Sunil must Gavaskar be an SG was, somewhere.
Like, you know, dismissed with an SG ball. Oh, and counted as like you know
the man who the trophy is named after.
True. There you go. Exactly. Yeah. And I thought it was a blueprint in how to play spin in those conditions. And I interviewed Steve Smith earlier this year in Sri Lanka, and he did tell me that the way he batted against Jadeja, not only in that Test match but that series, because previously he'd been getting into a lot of trouble with left-arm spinners just like Jadeja, who just started in, and he was getting LBW. But he felt that he played him so well that it's a blueprint that he still carries with him when it comes to playing spin in the subcontinent. So I think Steve Smith was being a little harsh on himself, which he is at times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's for many who were there, I think it counts as one of the better centuries you've seen being scored in those conditions. It wasn't as dominating as the Kevin Peterson one I saw in Mumbai in 2012, but it was right up there despite all these chances.
Yeah. All right. So, do we have any moments that we were ridiculous but not quite good enough to make our top three? Do you have any here?
I mean, just the fact that Umesh Yadav took 4 wickets in the first innings. I mean, we've spoken so much about spin and batting against spin and Steve O'Keefe. But A, Umesh Yadav didn't come on to bowl till the 28th over, the one where he got David Warner out.
Yep.
Which is kind of fascinating when you think about it, right? You pick one fast bowler in the side and he doesn't get a ball before the 28th over. Which said a lot about how India had read the pitch, very different to the curator.
Yes, I was just about to say.
Yeah, and he bowled so well that at one point he could have almost finished with a 5-wicket haul. He was just a little unlucky. And Stark and Hazelwood again were the ones who set the ball rolling for Australia in the first innings. Got rid of Kohli as well very early on. His first duck, like you said, ever in international cricket at that point. So, yeah, I mean, just the fact that the fast bowlers had a say in itself is quite ridiculous on that pitch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of Stark and Hazelwood, another ridiculous moment came a little bit before they started with the ball. With the bat, they put on a 55-run partnership for the final wicket. Stark scored 61 off 63 in total. But of the 55-run partnership, good old Josh Hazelwood contributed 1 run. So I did enjoy that.
That's nice. And just a couple more from me. One is like we spoke about Virat Kohli and Steve O'Keefe getting him out in the second innings. I think he shouldered arms. And it's since become like the meme, right? Or the GIF file. I really don't know how to pronounce that. It's GIF or GIF.
GIF,
I
have no
idea. Oh, it is GIF, yeah. The GIF file where he just looks bewildered at being clean bowled by whether it's Adil Rashid, Moeen Ali, Ish Sodhi. It's happened so often after that. I think the Moeen Ali one is the most popular one. But this I think, was the where it all started. The first time that Virat Kohli was bowled by a spinner and he just stood and kept turning around at once, not just once, twice or thrice, almost like somewhere in Virat Kohli's head, it was like, but this cannot be happening. I cannot be bowling. Why isn't the stump just not, you know, why aren't the bales just not appearing on top of the stumps again? Why isn't anyone else doing this? This is not allowed. This is not part of the game.
Yeah, I mean, you should totally go full WG Grace, right? Just pick him up, put him back on. No. Everyone's come to watch Kohli bat. They're not here to watch bloody Steve O'Keefe bowl.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And he would have gotten away with it as well.
He would have.
I don't think anyone in the crowd would have had any issues with it. Yeah. And speaking of the crowd as well, and look, I think the Test match finished late afternoon from memory, if I'm not mistaken. And the Australians were there till the wee hours. I mean, well after the sun had set, celebrating and singing. And a lot of us stayed back just to finish our stories. There was a lot to write about, as you can imagine.
Yep.
India's first loss in, and some ridiculous numbers, first loss in 4,502 days. Oh, this is Australia's first test win on Indian soil in 4,502 days. And India hadn't lost a test match in home for 52 months.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Mad numbers. So there was a lot to write about. And at one point, the Indian team randomly like walked out and started playing keep uppy with the, with the soccer ball. And thankfully, there was no one in the crowd
yeah.
that happened, because an Indian crowd or any crowd in the subcontinent after a loss like that, you're better off. I mean, most teams, home teams would just rush out, right? Like they wouldn't like stay back. And there they were playing keepy uppy for like some 20 minutes. I mean, there's one thing about like, you know, wanting to move on and forget about what happened and all that. Like Ravi Shastri said, wear 36 as a badge, like after the Adelaide test. But to go out there and play around with the soccer ball was kind of funny. It was kind of interesting. And look, thankfully, nobody got injured. Imagine being the guy who got injured while playing keepy uppy after your team has been smashed in a day and a half or two days and a half.
Yeah. All right. So it's probably time to vote now for what we think the 3-2-1 moments out of our nominations. So just to quickly go through the nominations, we've got the curator saying it's going to be a lightning fast pace pitch. We've got Matt Renshaw shitting himself. We got Yadav bowling Warner around his legs with a no ball. O'Keefe's nonsensical bowling. India's 7-for-11 collapse and Steve Smith's 5-for-100. So does anything leap out at you as being either spectacularly, you know, strong claim for the number one position out of those six?
Look, it pains me to say this, but it has to be Matt Renshaw.
Yeah, I was thinking it's probably Renshaw as well.
You can't think beyond Matt Renshaw, like running off the field. And and look, I think also the fact that he's been so honest about his bowling moments ever since even adds to it.
And it's so human, isn't it? It's just, I mean, as you said, everybody's been in this situation, not often in the middle of a cricket pitch, but you felt for poor Matt Renshaw.
Very much so. Yeah, absolutely. I think he has to be a hands-down winner for this test.
I am quite tickled by the curator claiming the pitch was going to be a super fast one. That's very funny. But I think it is hard to go past the India's 7-for-11.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, that's a record-breaking collapse. I think that's pretty ridiculous stuff.
Oh, yeah. And it had come on the back of India being such a dominant side. I was reading my preview for this test match about how India have taken the pitch out of the equation and, like, you know, doesn't matter what the pitch does, they'll still, I don't know why I'm sounding like Ravi Shastri all of a sudden, but you know, that was the tone of my piece. Like, it was like nothing can stop India. And then, you know, poor old Steve O'Keefe does what he does, or what he did.
Well, fair enough to assume that if they hadn't lost a test on home soil in, you know, 4 and a bit years.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. So I think, that's also a lesson for home teams, right? There's a level to which you can sort of doctor or whatever, tamper with the pitch.
Mm.
But, you know, if you make it extreme, this extreme, you're just bringing the opposition into the game. Like, that's what happened there.
Yeah. So I guess the final nominations. So what we've got left here is Steve O'Keefe's, which I think is pretty strong. Mm-hmm. Not so much the fact that he got the exact same figures in both innings and the every other ball hat trick, I think is more the crux of my nomination. What else have we got? The bowling Warner off a no ball there. That seems almost too commonplace now.
Yeah, that's true. I think I don't think it makes the cut, but it's good to know that we could one day just do an episode or do a show on David Warner getting
Countdown Warner's best no ball wickets. Yeah, and then we've got the curator's fast pitch and Steve Smith's 5-for-100. Anything leaping out at you there?
I think Steve O'Keefe's moment under the sun, right? I mean, you can argue that the 7-for-11 is sort of also Steve O'Keefe.
Yeah.
And sneak in maybe the curator just because of how the test match.
I'm a big fan of the curator claiming it was going to be a fast pitch. I didn't know that before you put it in the sheet. So that really tickles me. So sorry, Steve O'Keefe, you'll just have to settle for your ridiculously good bowler figures, because I think we're going to give the curator 1 point, which does make this this first test a draw.
It does.
Australia's via Matt Wrench will get 3 points, but India via the 7 for 11 and the optimistic claims of it being a fast pitch get 2 and 1 point to draw the first test. So we'll be going to the second test nil all.
Well, very much so. And courtesy the curator, look, like he's played. He eventually did deliver what I had asked him for back then, if you remember. And he's done it again. He's got us off on a very to an even start. And that's where we should be at the start of this Border Gavaskar series, or the ridiculous Border Gavaskar series. As we go into each one of these test matches and the many, many other series that they've played, you'll find that they've just become so close to each other in terms of where they stack up when you consider all conditions and everything. Even though India beaten Australia twice in two series in Australia, which is kind of unheard of, I think it kind of sets us off well.
Yes, I agree. So thank you for listening. You can check out Bharat's writing. Where's the best place to find your writing?
Oh, it's generally, I do write the most for cricbuzz.com. I am contracted to them. I write here, there, everywhere. Otherwise, I say a lot of random things on Twitter. You can follow me if you want to see a lot of dog pictures and dog videos doing ridiculous things.
So you can follow Bharat at BeastieBoy07. And I'm at Leib Cricket. We do also have a Twitter account for this particular podcast. That's RidicBG, RidicBG. I tried to get RidiculousBG, but somebody already has that reason. You can also find my writing. I'm over at LeibCricket.com. And we will be back in a week with our coverage of the second test of the 2017 Ridiculous Border Gavaskar series. So make sure you don't miss out on that by subscribing to the podcast. And that's also where you can give us your honest 5-star ratings on the podcast store of your choice. And we will speak to you next week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.